You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Tired of the same old movie podcasts?
Yeah.
What if I told you there's a podcast that gabs about good and bad movies?
Why are you spreading such lies?
It's true, you rascal. Every week, Double Edge Double Bill mixes that scrumptious taste of good movies with the sour flavor of a bad one.
That sounds tasty.
Well, don't delay. Stuff it down your ear throats today. Double Edge Double Bill is part of the Balance ESO Network Breakfast. It can be found wherever you download podcasts.
Evidently, you do not realize you are in an interstellar conveyance. You are already outside the atmosphere of your own planet.
Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack!
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. Hey, we're going to the circus in this week's episode, A Circus of Horrors, 1960. A classic cult film that has really developed quite a following in the United States. Now, this was a film that was shot in Great Britain, and it was pretty much a British production. You remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about Horrors of the Black Museum. Well, it was done by the same company that produced Horrors of the Black Museum. Now, we're talking about Anglo-Amalgamated Arts. They were influenced heavily by the success of Hammer Films and what they had been doing on the horror scene, and they wanted to cash in on it. You know, we've talked about this with other companies like Amicus and some others that tried to recreate the success that Hammer Films had, and Amalgamated was just one of those. Now, when the film came over to the United States, it was picked up by American International Pictures. They sort of collaborated on the production of this film so they could get rights to it in the United States, and it became a surprise hit here in the United States when it was released on a double bill with Roger Corman's Bucket of Blood. So the two ran for quite a while. Now, I did not see the film in the movie theater. I saw it on TV. So it might have been a little sanitized. I really can't remember. I'm trying to think back. I saw it in the mid-60s. It was on one of the monster movie matinee shows that I was hooked on all during my growing up. And then I didn't see it for a while. You know, it got some showings here and there, and it developed, a following. As kids, I know we really liked it. I liked the film. I think it's still very entertaining. There's others that don't think it's very, very good. It was spoofed on Mystery Science Theater 3000, and it's one of those films that I thought, hey, guys, I think you got a little carried away on this one, because this film isn't that bad. It really, it's an interesting nostalgia film, and I think it's rightly developed its cult status here in the United States. So we're going to give it a loving look as we talk about it here. It's got a great cast, great chemistry in this cast, and I think it's fairly well written. You know, for 1960, I think we did pretty well. There were some scenes that were cut out of the film because of a little bit of gore. And again, I want to warn everybody that we're going to spoil everything as we talk about this film. So if you've not seen Circus of Horrors, you might want to watch it first before you listen any further. It's pretty easy to find, and you can find it on streaming services. I think Tubi has got it for free. You have to put up with some commercials. But that's going to be very similar to the way I first saw it, because when I for the very first time saw this film, it was on a monster movie matinee, and of course that had TV commercials. But the British censors cut some of the gore out of there. There was one particular scene we'll talk about when we get into the storyline that they thought was just a little bit too intense, and it probably would have been too intense for American television when it was released here. It is available on Blu-ray. Of course, it was released on DVD in 2010 and then came out on Blu-ray, beautifully restored. And I've seen the restored version of it, and it is just gorgeous. I mean, it's just, you know, the colors and stuff are very, very vivid and bright. Let's talk a little bit about the cast and crew of Circus of horrors. Now, we talked about writer George Baxt, and I want to get into him a little bit. He's going to collaborate down the road in a few years after he wrote this screenplay with the director of this film, Sidney Hayers. Sidney, we're going to talk about just a second here. Let's talk about George real quickly. George is a fairly prolific writer in Great Britain. 24 credits, did a lot of TV, but he is going to be best known for a film that he and Hayers collaborated on in 1962 called Night of the Eagle. You might remember that film. It's based on a Charles Beaumont story. And Night of the Eagle would deliver George Baxt a Hugo Award for Best Dramatic Presentation. He shared it with Sidney Hayers, who was the director of that film as well, Charles Beaumont, who helped write the screenplay along with Richard Matheson and Fritz Lieber Jr. So, Night of the Eagle, if you get a chance to check it out, it's a very, very good film. So we got a good writer on this, and George Baxt decided to come up with a story that takes place in a circus, because Amalgamated, they thought, we had Horrors of the Black Museum. Let's see if we can put one in the circus. Can we do a horror film in the circus? And George Baxt came up with the idea that is the main idea for Circus of Horrors, which is you have, I won't say a mad scientist, but you've got a doctor, and he's sort of in a mad scientist role. He's a plastic surgeon who's hiding out from the police. He takes people and changes their faces so they can hide out with him in the circus. In other words, hide in plain sight. It's a pretty good little concept. And I know it was something that attracted me as a kid because I was a big fan of the circus. We had a big top circus that came in every year to my hometown. It wasn't Ringling Brothers. Now, Ringling Brothers, we had to go to like Syracuse to see, which I saw for many years. And then every city I ever lived in, including Atlanta, I would go see the Ringling Brothers Circus. We had a smaller circus but also performed under the big top. And it was a lot of fun. We would go every year when it came. My mom and dad would take us to go see the circus. They were big fans as well. So when I saw that there was this monster movie that took place in a circus, I was sort of intrigued too. And of course, that's what Amalgamated was sort of hoping would happen. And it did. I think that was one thing that really made it popular here in the United States. So George Baxt, he writes a pretty good screenplay. I think it's, when we tell you a little bit about the cast that's in this movie, you will see how they made some perfect choices as to the people in this film. Now, when I was doing some research on this, a lot of times I'll tell you about, well, this actor and that actor was not the first choice for the production company. I couldn't find any of that here. It seemed like everyone that they cast in this film were the people that they wanted right up front, and they did an excellent job. We're going to get to the cast here in a second. Let's talk about Sidney Hayers. This would be his first director's job on a full-length feature film. Did a lot of television, did some shorts and that sort of thing. He lived until he was 78 years old. Unfortunately, his life was cut short then by cancer. I would have liked to have seen him continue on because he really, he was a pretty good director on this. He directed several episodes of The Avengers. He was a second unit director on two big films, and ones that I loved, A Night to Remember, one of the first, very first good movies done on the Titanic, and still the one I prefer out of all the Titanic movies out there. I still think A Night to Remember is the best film that they ever shot. But he was second unit director on that, and also second unit director on a war film that I really liked, A Bridge Too Far, which came out in 1977. But again, directed a lot of episodes of The Avengers, Night of the Eagle, which he won a lot of accolades for as well, and several other television series in Great Britain. He was quite a prolific director in Great Britain. Probably not as well known here in the United States, but a good director, and I think a good choice for this film because this is a tight film. The story moves along very quickly. Now, some people might argue that it moves along too quickly, but I'll tell you what, for Monster Movie Fair, as a kid and as a young adult and even at my age now, I really enjoy this film. I really do. I just think it's very entertaining. I've watched it a couple of times already this week getting ready for the podcast, and it just always satisfies. So let's go ahead and talk about the cast that we're going to see in this. And of course, our lead, I'm going to say our mad scientist type character, our mad doctor, played by the perfect actor to play this character. And a favorite of mine, he's developed quite a cult following throughout his career, Anton Driffing. Just a terrific German actor born in 1916. We lost him back in 1989 at the age of 72. But this guy probably had one of the most incredible screen presence on the small screen and on the large screen. He played a variety of Nazis. In fact, he kidded about it in interviews and things of that nature, that, you know, when there was a war film early on in his career, he would play German soldiers, but he would always play like aristocratic type generals or captains or you know, whatever, in war films. And he just played a variety of Nazis because he had great chiseled features. He was very tall. He's more than 6 feet tall. And he just had an incredible screen presence. His command of English was very good. I mean, he had an accent, but he had a very, very good command of the English language. So he was just the perfect one. But he would be typecast always, it seemed like, as Nazis or bad guys. Of course, he's a bad guy in this one, but just a fun guy to watch. It's just a shame the cancer struck him down, like it did so many actors from this time period. And a lot of it, you know, I attribute probably to smoking, because everybody smoked during that generation. But I think this is a signature role for him. A lot of people, when you talk about Anton Driffing, they'll remember that. I always remember him as a general in Where Eagles Dare. And it wasn't a big role, but it was a nice role at the end. But again, you know, again, here we go, another Nazi general. You know, I saw him in so many war films. But I always, always thought of, when I thought of a monster movie with Anton Driffing, it's, oh, yeah, the one about the circus. Yeah, really, really liked that. And quite a career. Just quite a terrific career for Anton Driffing. And again, he was the perfect guy to play this Dr. Rossiter. Now, Dr. Rossiter, in the beginning of this, is trying to escape from the police because he has operated on a very rich British woman's face, and he had warned her that, you know, it was going to take several operations. He had this new technique, this new radical technique that was going to revolutionize a plastic surgery. This takes place, the movie originally starts off taking place 2 years after World War II in 1947. So he has a lot of business because a lot of people that were wounded from the bombs in Great Britain, you know, World War II. And then later on, the film is going to move to France, and you've got the same situation there where civilians were injured and wounded by bombing and attacks too. And that's what's happened with this British gal. She's had a serious injury from that, and something goes wrong. You know, he blames her, but, you know, she blames him. But the police are after him because he just made a mess of the operation. We see her face. You know, she's tearing up her house. She's so upset with the way her face looks, and it's just grossly malformed. It almost looks like her face was made of plastic and it was melting. That's the best way I can describe it. So right out of the blocks, and I'm thinking in terms of a kid when I first saw this, you know, I was probably like 10 or 11 years old. I'm like, oh, my God, that's so cool. The makeup on this is so cool. And Rossiter gets into this big car chase. This is right in the very beginning of the film. We're talking about the first 10 minutes. So, I mean, they get you going right in the beginning. And he runs his car off a cliff, and they assume he's dead. But then we cut to a home where there's a couple. They're a brother and a sister, and they're waiting. They're wondering, you know, where is he? You know, we might be getting into trouble for what's going on here. This brother and sister have been helping Rossiter with his operations. They know he's in trouble. They know the police are looking for him, and they assume, you know, they're getting ready to leave, and all of a sudden there's a knock on the door, and it's Rossiter, and he's all banged up. He got out of the car in time before it blew up, but he's all banged up. and has made his way back to the house. They've got to pack up and leave, but he tells the brother and sister, Angela and Martin, played by Jane Hilton and Kenneth Griffin. And both of them, both Kenneth and Jane, are very, very popular character actors in Great Britain during the 60s and the 70s. They're two people you'd recognize their faces in a heartbeat. And we establish in the film that Angela has a romantic involvement with Rossiter as well. And that continues on. So they're the henchmen, you know, they're the accomplices. They know that if Rossiter ever gets caught, they're going down with him because they have helped with all of these operations. They operate, you know, he talks them through. He says, you just give me a local anesthetic and I will talk you through the procedure, because they've witnessed them all. So they're familiar with this new technique, and they change his face so that it looks totally, well, it looks different. I'll put it that way. You know, I mean, but you know, this is where you suspend a little disbelief, because, you know, I think it would be easy for him to be recognized. But then again, you never know. You know, they change it just enough so they clean it up a little bit. He had a little like a little Van Dyke beard that's gone, and he does have a different appearance. And the next time we see them, they're in France. They know that they can't stay in Great Britain because the police are going to be hot on their trail. So these three people are going to be sort of the center focus of the rest of the story. You've got, you know, Angela and Martin and their connection with Rossiter, who changes his name to Dr. Bernard Schuller so that he can sort of hide in plain sight, as he says, in another country. And he still wants to continue on with his technique because he's obsessed. And this is where he becomes sort of like a Dr. Frankenstein type character. I think very similar to the way Peter Cushing played Dr. Frankenstein. He is obsessed with his research. And it's like, yes, I know that I got in trouble with the police for doing this, you know, almost like doing human experiments or whatever. But this technique works, and it can work miracles for people, you know, who have these serious deformities or whatever, and I can help them, and I can make them look normal again. And the day will come when everything goes right, and I will present my findings to the medical community, and then they will accept what I've been doing. And that drives him for everything that he does in the rest of this movie. That's what he wants to do. Sounds like Dr. Frankenstein. And I think that's where George Baxter, I mean, I love the way he weaved that into the story. Now, I'll tell you in a minute how he gets involved with the circus. It's a circus run by Donald Pleasance, his character's name, Vanet. And as they're driving, as Dr. Schuller, I'll call him Schuller now, and Angela and Martin are driving, they're heading for a city in France. It's getting late in the day, and they're not quite sure if they're on the right road. Schuller says, let's stop and ask this young girl. There's a young girl who is getting some water out of a well, and they stop. And when Schuller asks her, hey, do you know the way to Bordeaux? Is this the right road? And she says, well, I'm really not sure, but my father would know. And he says, well, where's your father? And he's at this circus right there. They're right across this little road. You can see where the circus is holed up. She says, he's over there. We have a circus. It's, you know, it's a poor circus, but, you know, it's a circus. But Schuller notices her face, and she's got a horrible scar on the left side of her face. And he goes, how did that happen? And she said, well, I was in school. And the school got bombed, and I was in it. And she says, there's others like me from that, you know, from the war. There's this, again, 2 years removed from the end of World War II. And you can tell the wheels are spinning. So he tells Angela Martin, he says, wait here, I'll be right back. And he talks with Vanet. Donald Pleasance plays his character so well. Again, you know, we've talked so much about Donald Pleasance in the horror films that he's done. He's going to be best known for the Halloween series. But, I mean, you know, he was in The Great Escape and in Fantastic Voyage, which we talked about here several seasons ago, Monster Attack, a great sci-fi. He is just one of the most likable character actors I've ever seen growing up. And whether he's a bad guy because he's sort of a bad guy in Fantastic Voyage, or whether he's a good guy because he's a good guy in this. Owner of this poor circus, he explains that, you know, the war has really taken its toll. And, you know, there's not much, people don't have much money because of the war. I mean, again, we're talking France here. They were devastated by World War II. And he's, and Rossiter slash Schuller is saying, look, I want your permission to operate on your daughter. I can make her look beautiful again. I have this technique. And you know, Van A's like, how do I know you are who you are or whatever? But the more he talks, he says, you know, we can operate here, you know, because he says, I don't have money for a hospital or anything. He says, I'm not going to charge you. He says, I want to help your daughter. You know, I can set up an operating room here and we'll do it. And he finally agrees. And he agrees to it. Now, the wine that he's drinking might have a lot to do with it because he's drinking quite a bit. Again, you know, it's been a rough life for him since the war. But they operate on the daughter. The daughter, the young daughter, is played by an actress by the name of Carla Challoner. Now, you may not recognize her, and I think this is about the only thing I ever saw her in growing up, because she did a lot of British television, and she got out of acting about 18 years later. So she was just a young adult when she made her last appearance on television. A lot of TV, did a lot of TV in Great Britain, and a lot of shows that didn't make it over here to the United States, or at least didn't make it over here when I was growing up. That some of them are probably available now because a lot of them have been re-released and sent over here to the United States. But she's a terrific actress, a child actor. She just plays this so beautifully. I mean, your heart just sinks. It's like, yeah, if he can make her face look beautiful again, I mean, you fall in love with this little gal. And you want to see the best for her. So they did this, you know, they cast this one perfectly. And she was a very popular child actress at the time in Great Britain. So it was a good choice. You know, they knew they would have the audience behind them on this. And American audiences took to her very, very quickly. It's a very small part because, again, we're going to see her, you know, the next time we see her, she'll be all grown up. But the bandages come off and she looks perfect. And she runs around. It's a great scene. It's a great heart-tugging scene where she runs into the, you know, runs out into the yard where all the circus animals are. She talks to the Black Panther, saying, I look beautiful. She talks to the elephant. You know, I mean, you know, these are her only friends. And the father says, I will give you anything. I'll give you anything. And he says, well, how about a share of the circus? We'll become partners. That's all I want. And Van A agrees to it. And so Schuller goes back to you know, with Angela and Martin and says, you know, this is where we hide out. This is the perfect front for us. Is this circus? And they agree. Now, again, the most interesting part about this film, and it's one of those little sub-stories, that this is a deep film. You know, some people may think it's shallow, but it's really not, is what keeps Angela and Martin. Well, we know Angela hangs around with him because she's got romantic interests in him. And Martin he's just sort of the, you know, the younger brother, and, you know, he's not a strong individual, you know, so he gives in a lot, you know, that sort of thing. And that keeps them together. And, you know, Schuller is a sociopath. I mean, he's a master at using people. And he has something on them, but we never really know what it is. But he manages to always keep them by his side and doing whatever he wants them to do. So there's a scene probably a few days after this scene with Nicole, the daughter, running around saying, I'm beautiful, I'm beautiful, I'm beautiful. And then I agreeing to be partners with Schuller, who says, I will make this circus a fantastic circus again. And his idea is he's already got the wheel spinning about, I can find others who are damaged, like Nicole was, and I will transform them, and then they will owe me. They'll be holding to me, and we'll make the circus come alive from these people. But an accident happens where Van A's drunk one night. He's got a dancing bear that is one of the most popular attractions in his circus, and through an unfortunate series of events, the bear kills him. And of course, Schuller sits there and he can't do anything to stop it, really, or he sort of acts like he can't. But I think you can see the wheel spinning in his mind. It's like, yeah, if Vinay's out of the way, now I'm in charge of, you know, now I can do exactly what I want with no one looking over my shoulder. And of course, he gets the circus. Wow. You know, so we see, you know, he's an opportunist as well. And he does. He witnesses Vinay's death and really makes no effort to save him from this bear that it didn't mean it. It just, like I said, a series of events that sets the bear off and he attacks Vinay and Vinay can't defend himself. I mean, who could? And a large bear attacks you. That's, you know, that's it. So we skip up 10 years now. Now we're going 10 years. This is what we will no longer see young Nicole, played by Carla Challoner. Now we're going to see her fully grown, and she's still with the circus, and she's working with the circus. She's got a couple of acts that she does as well. And the older Nicole is played by Yvonne Millar. Now, that name may be familiar to you because, you know, Yvonne Millar, for those of us in the monster business and those of us who love monster movies, will always remember her as the teacher in The Brides of Dracula. She was the one that David Peel had his eyes on. You know, she was going to get married to the Baron von Meister, the one that Van Helsing had to save from the throes of the vampires. So that's I always remember her. For that. And again, she's perfect. She's a French actress, very, very prolific as well in British cinema. It has the perfect accent, so it worked well. And she's a good actress, and she does very well. So she's the young girl grown up now, still with the circus. And through a series of events, Schuller is able to get people to perform in the circus. Now, one he meets in the city that they're in, a gal by the name of Alyssa, she's a prostitute, and Schuller ends up, and he sees that she's got a bad scar on her face, so he says, that's a target. This is someone that I can use. And he sees Alyssa rob an older gentleman who is, soliciting in this bar. They go outside an alley. She robs him, stabs him with a knife, and while he's dying, she's running off, and Schuller catches her, and now she knows, you know, she's been caught. And it's like, he says, no, I'm not going to turn you into the police, but I've got a proposition for you. I can fix that scar. I can fix your face. And of course, he does it beautifully. This new technique of his is very effective. And so now he's got Alyssa under his wings. Now, Alyssa's played by an actress by the name of Erica Remberg. And Erica Remberg is, again, she was very popular, a British actress, lived a long life until she was 85 years old. 51 credits. She acted right up until 1989. And the interesting thing about Erica Remberg is that she was married for several years to the director, Sidney Harris. So we see the connection there. We see how that part probably worked out because they were married at the time. A very striking brunette, beautiful gal. And this is the one thing that will be the trademark of this circus is all the beautiful women that have appeared in it. But what we come to find out now, Alyssa does a high wire act, or a high rope act, I should say, where she dances on the rope and, you know, swings around and does all kinds of dangerous artistic type things, and is the second headliner in the circus. There is one gal ahead of her who she's jealous of, and so we know there's a dynamic going there between her and the headliner, who we're going to talk about in just a second there. But we find out that, and this is through conversations, I like the way that that George Max put this together in the screenplay, that Schuller is talking to Alyssa and some of the other people in the circus. We find out there have been a series of unfortunate accidents. Some of the women have been, you know, have died, I won't say mysteriously, but accidentally. At least they were ruled as accidents. And through conversations with Martin and Angela, we find out that, you know, whenever someone is beholden to Schuller and sort of knows his secret, that he is this surgeon that was hiding out from the police in Great Britain, they can't leave the circus. You know, it's almost like a mob type thing. It's like, Now, once you're working for him, you've got to stay with him because he can't risk anyone leaving the circus and possibly, you know, giving away his secret. So these women have met an unfortunate end because he can't let them leave. And he stages these accidents. And again, I'm not going to go into exact detail on the film because, you know, if you haven't seen it, I want to make sure you get a chance to see it. So there is a performer named Magna von Meck, played by Vonda Hudson. Again, she's a longtime character actress in Great Britain. Again, she lived a long life, 70 years old when she passed away. She appeared on The Avengers. A lot of people that you see in this film will have made appearances on The Avengers, of course, because of Hayes' involvement with The Avengers and some of the other crew. And again, it was the hottest show in Great Britain. But Circus of Horrors is probably going to be her signature film. Absolutely her signature film. The one that at least American audiences are going to know about. Magda does a horse trick. I mean, she rides, you know, she's a horsewoman, you know, standing and jumping rope on horseback. She's got this dangerous routine that she does where she jumps through a wall of knives while she's on horseback and all that. And she is the headliner. Magna is the one that Alyssa is very, very jealous of, because if Magna's not there, then Alyssa should move into the top spot. And she's sort of hoping for that. Well, Magna is in love with this elderly gentleman. He's very rich. And she wants to get out of the circus. She just wants a normal life. She talks Schuller into letting her leave. Or, you know, Schuller says, you know, I really don't want you to leave. You're my headliner and all that. But she says, you know, I want to be friends. And we find out that whenever Schuller, you know, now we're sort of finding out that whenever Schuller operates on one of these beautiful women and convert, you know, changes them back to a beautiful looking woman, you know, from the scars that they've got, that he has romantic interests in them, and they usually end up having some kind of sexual relationship. And Magda says, look, I just want to be friends. I really love this guy. And Schuller plays along with it, but you know something's not right. You know that she's toast. And as it turns out, one of the other acts that she's involved with is a knife-throwing act, where they got a guy dressed up like an Indian chief, and he throws knives at different women, you know, and, you know, very precision, like knife throwing. And Magna is part of the act where she's put on a rotating platform and he's throwing knives at her. Well, Schuller sets it up with Martin again. Martin is not a bad guy, but he's under Schuller's wing. I mean, he gives in all the time. You can tell he does not like what he has to do. And we sort of get the idea that he's sort of responsible. He's the guy that Schuller has, you know, set up these accidents for these women, and he sets up another one for Magda, and she ends up getting killed during that. One of the knives pierces her throat and severs her jugular vein. Now, this is the one scene that I was telling you about a little while ago that the British censors trimmed up a little bit. And I think in one case they made the scene better, because the original scene actually showed the knife going into her neck, you know, and all that, and it was very, very bloody. And the censor said, no, that's a little bit too much. So the way it's portrayed in the film now is that you know, you see it through the eyes of the people watching, especially Angela, who realizes that something's up because she can't find Martin, and Martin is sabotaging the mechanism so that there's going to be an accident. And, you know, and I mean, Angela knows this. She's always, you know, everybody's looking the other way. They know this stuff is going on. But we see the horror-stricken audience and Angela screaming. And then, you know, the people are crowded around the platform. And as the camera comes in and the people pull away, we just see the knife sticking out of her throat with, you know, a little bit of blood. It's a much better scene because it leaves it to your imagination. Now, while this is going on, we've got a sub-story going, because this circus has developed a reputation called the Jinxed Circus because of these accidental deaths. And there's some suspicion. You know, now, this is all happening in France, and they're headed to London. now, you know, Shuler's now getting bold. He's, you know, he's pulled off this charade for so long that he feels like he can come back to England and not be recognized and not be caught and maybe get to a point where he can say, yes, I am the plastic surgeon and look what I have done. And here's my, and that's going to overshadow everything else. They're under investigation. The circus is being looked at by the British authorities. So we're going to be introduced to Jack Gwillim. Now, a very, very familiar British actor and one to American audiences. So this was one that was probably part of the appeal that this film had to American audiences because Jack Gwillim appeared in a lot of American films. Okay, it's at this point that we're going to be introduced to Superintendent Andrews. He's a British policeman for Scotland Yard who's looking into the circus. You know, he's a little, you know, they're coming to London. They're going to be doing a tour in Great Britain. And these deaths, these accidental deaths have just happened too frequently. You know, it's got his attention. And so he commissions one of his inspectors, Arthur Ames is his name, played by Conrad Phillips, another very popular British actor. He's going to be one of those that you'll recognize. Young, very attractive guy. And he says, I want you to dig into this and see if there's anything there, because it's just something very strange about this. We see one other guy that makes a brief appearance on a phone call to Inspector Andrews, and that's a German police inspector played by Peter Swanwick. Peter Swanwick always played like Germans. I mean, he was a British actor, but he always played a lot of Germans. He had, you know, he had a bald head, completely bald head, little round glasses and stuff, and just had that steely look as a German. So, and this is perfect for this. And he's saying, yes, I don't know about these guys. I really don't, you know, and I have suspicions myself. So that gets this all into motion. So we've got Arthur Ames who's telling him he's doing a story for a magazine. So Shuler is allowing the guy to hang around. He's not really too suspicious yet, although it bothers him a little bit. And unbeknownst to him, Arthur Ames wins the trust of Nicole, who is now grown up. Now, Nicole, since Magda has had an unfortunate accident, we find out that Magda has been training her to take her place when she goes and gets married to this rich guy. Well, now that Magda is dead, Nicole is, you know, has been ready to step into it and starts doing all of the heavyweight, stunts and acts that Magda did. But she's got this thing going on with Arthur Ames, too, and they're getting closer and closer. And, of course, he finds out, yes, she says, I was a little girl. I've been with the circus, you know, ever since I was a little girl. My father owned it, and then when my father died, my uncle, my uncle Bernard, took over. And she always thought of him as her uncle, even though, he wasn't. I mean, you know, and she doesn't give away the fact that he operated on her and all that stuff. They keep that a secret. So as Nicole and Arthur get closer, he's finding out there's just some things that don't add up. Now, I want to mention one other guy here that makes an appearance in here because we see a lot of clowns and things. And of course, there's a couple of dwarfs that are in the clown troupe. One in particular that might not be familiar to you when you watch this, but will go on to become one of the most beloved characters in film history. And that's Kenny Baker. Kenny Baker played R2-D2. And, always appeared in a lot of British films and a lot of American films. And Kenny was just a very, very popular actor, very prolific as well. And he's a lot of fun in this. He's got a couple of really fun scenes here in the Circus of Horrors as the clowns are performing. You know, they've got a Keystone Cops routine and some others. So I just wanted to mention that because he was just getting started in the business. And, of course, it would be another 17 years before he got to play in Star Wars and all the Star Wars films. And one other guy we're going to mention is John Merivale. John Merivale plays Edward Finsbury, and he is married to the woman that we see in the very beginning who's had the botched surgery. And John Merivale, I'll always remember for A Night to Remember, but Monster fans will always remember John Merivale for being the professor, and that they dubbed his voice. I always hated that in Kaltiki, the immortal monster. But again, a good all-around actor. One of the interesting things about John Merivale, and I just wanted to mention this, one reason I wanted to mention him, was back when we did the show on Kel-Tiki, back in our very first season, I didn't get a chance to talk about him very much. And one thing a lot of people did not know about John Merivale was that he had quite a friendship with Vivian Leigh and became her caretaker in her latter years when she was suffering from dementia. And her health just went, the last 10 years of her life when she was so ill. John Merivale was with her right up until the end when she died. And I always found that very, very interesting about him. He sort of put his career on hold a little bit so he could take care of Vivian Leigh. So a great cast. We've got a great veteran cast. So now as things are sort of heating up, we've got Alyssa who threatens Schuler because he has found a new woman. A new woman appears, and she was someone that knew Magda. And Magda had said what an incredible job Schuler had done on her face, because all of these people had been operated on by Schuler. And her name is Melina, and played by Yvonne Romain. Again, another strikingly beautiful dark-haired gal. And she's got this horrible scar on her face where we find out that her boyfriend had thrown acid on her face. And of course, and by what she says, almost in an offhand comment, it's like, oh, he won't be doing that anymore. So we get an idea. That did not turn out well for the boyfriend either. But quite a challenge. And Schuler is able, he says, you're going to be the most beautiful gal I've ever operated on. And he just absolutely smitten with Melina. And he has her, when, of course, the operation is a complete success. And she appears as Helen of Troy. He says, you're going to be my Helen of Troy. Because part of the circus on the midway of the circus, they've got this this hall of beauty. They have Adam and Eve. They've got Sappho. They got all these people playing these beautiful. And, of course, these are all people we have to assume he has done plastic surgery on to make them look beautiful. And she's Helen of Troy. But he wants her to go further. And he wants her to develop a bigger act. They're going to work on a bigger act. But she's the headliner when she appears as Helen of Troy. This does not sit well with Alyssa, who was supposed to be the headliner because Magda was gone. And now all of a sudden she's playing second fiddle now to Helen of Troy and whatever act that Schuler comes up. And it's going to end up being a lion tamer act that he's going to have her do. Alyssa threatens Schuler and just says, I can tell these people, who you really are and all that stuff. And I think it's probably in your best interest to make me the headliner again. And of course, Schuler's like, well, I guess I have no choice. Of course, Schuler's not going to let that fly. Nobody tells him what to do. Melina is the gal that is going to be his headliner. He's madly in love with her because that's not going over well with Angela either, because Angela has been saving herself for him and figures sooner or later he's going to come along and they will be together. But, he just keeps putting her off and just going from one woman to the next. And again, this is part of that dynamic, these underlying stories that make this film so interesting. Alyssa, there's an incident where a python is released into her dressing room, and she manages to escape. Schuler thinks he's got her this time, but manages to escape, so that makes it even worse. So Schuler's got to go to extremes, and it's like, hey, Martin, I got a job for you. Well, we know where this is going to go. And as I said, she works high up on a rope. She does this one routine where she puts a hangman's noose around her neck and spins around, but Martin is able to set it up where it looks like an accident and she falls from the rope about 30 feet and is instantly killed. And now Ames and Andrews, they're convinced something is going on. They know something is going on. Well, Melina has a big row with Schuler as well. So, her days are numbered. And when they're going to debut her in this big lion tamer routine, and she's a little nervous, and I would be too. You've got these big cats and you're going to be in a cage with them. And he says, but that, no, I'm going to have them tranquilized. They will be sedated enough so they will do what you want them to do. And of course, We got old Martin again. And he doesn't sedate the lions. And we can see what happens there. And of course, that's it for Melina. She's gone. Well, we've got another story that's developing. Like, this is the one reason I mentioned, I wanted to mention John Merivale, because the woman that we saw in the very beginning, Evelyn Morley Finsbury, his wife, you know, who was the one, and she's played by Colette Wilde, not a very well-known actress. This is going to be really the biggest film that she ever did in her career. She had a very short career. They're at the circus because they're big. They donate a lot of money to charities and things like that. And she's at the circus, and she figures out that Shuler is Rossiter through one of the most ridiculous, not ridiculous, but it's like, you know, these bad guys always get caught by something really stupid. And it's a ring that he always wears. And he has been injured by one of the tigers through another accident. Oh, I've got all these stories going on. So he's bandaged up a little bit. So he figures, you know, when they say, yeah, it's that Morley woman. You know, this is Martin and Andrew. She's going to know who you are. But he says, you know, he's got these bandages on. He says, no, she won't recognize me. She won't recognize me. And when she sees the ring, she knows it's him. And she faints. That sets up a chain of events where Shuler realizes that he has been spotted. Angela and Martin, they just want to run away. They just want to end it all. They don't want to do this anymore. And again, you work for Shuler? You work for Shuler. You don't quit. And so Angela and Shuler have it out in their trailer. And, you know, she professes her love. She says, I've given you everything. I've done everything you wanted me to do and all of that. And he ends up stabbing her. He ends up killing her. And, of course, you know, Martin now, he's cooperating with the police. You know, that's it. That is the final straw for him. And it all leads to a big chase. And this Morley woman, who is supposedly going home, manages to get a hold of her car as John Merivale's character, who plays her husband. He's going in to pay for some gas. She jumps into the driver's side of the car and heads back to the circus where she sees Shuler trying to run away from the cops. And she runs him over with the car. Now, that's an allusion to the earlier chase scene in the beginning where Shuler ran over a policeman, a police bobby, during their chase scene. So it was sort of turnabout as fair play as it comes around full circle and the movie comes to an end. Like I said, it goes a mile a minute, and I was jumping back and forth over various things. There is a lot to this story, folks. Even listening to this, if by chance you did listen to this podcast before watching this film, there's a lot more to this movie than what I've said on this podcast. But I think it's a fun movie. I think it holds you through the whole thing. As a kid, I loved it. I just loved the whole circus thing going. And I do want to pay credit to the Billy Smart Circus, which was a famous touring circus in Great Britain. They provided a lot of the acts and the background and the big top. For the circus scenes, so we were watching a lot of their performers doing performances during this film. So Billy Smart Circus, they get a nice credit in this. I think everything about this film plays very well. And I think it's why it developed a cult following. And in fact, Amalgamated was actually very surprised at the result and the reception that it got in the United States, because it got sort of a lukewarm reception in Great Britain. But in the United States, where the AIP released it with Bucket of Blood, it did very well. And it did very well on television. And that led, you know, down the road to VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray. It's developed quite a cult following here in the United States. And I think it's well worth a look. Circus of Horrors from 1960. Check it out. I think you'll have a lot of fun. All right, folks, we'll be back with you again next Monday for an all-new episode of Monster Attack. Clay Sayre's going to be sitting in with us, and we've got some fun coming your way on that show. And we're working out our schedule now. You know, Mark is still really tied up right now, so hopefully he'll be joining us very soon. I know he'll be with us for our 6th anniversary show, and hopefully Madeline will be able to join us. We've got her lined up for a fun show, for a fun holiday show. Coming up. See, Madeline and I always do those holiday shows. Yeah, we enjoy doing those. So we'll get her schedule together too, and we'll be bringing you some fun shows for the holiday season of 2021 coming up. So be sure to check us out every Monday. And again, once again, I just want to tell everyone to pass the word on. We are now a member of the ESO Network. Some great podcasts. Check them out. They've been around for several years. A big network with some terrific podcasts. If you like Doctor Who, if you like all things geek, they've got it all at the ESO Network. Check out ESONetwork.com. And hey, you're going to see Monster Attack there as well. We're their newest member. So we really appreciate them letting us come on board with them. Folks, we will see you again next Monday. Have a great week.
Star Trek is a vision.
Great storytelling.
My favorite TV show of all time.
I really love it, and it's so much fun.
Join our crew aboard Earth Station Trek for your regular podcast escape into the Trekverse.
Make it so.
Let's see what's out there.
Wait a minute. I thought we all agreed to say make it so.
No, let's go. It's fun.
But make it so is iconic. It's classic.
It's too iconic.
So we're all going to do make it so?
No.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.